Let's identify, who is Bill Shillingford? What did you do before you retired and got more involved with fishing? The name Bucktail Willie. Give us a little backgrounder on Bill Shillingford, a.k.a. Bucktail Willie.
Well, first of all, I've been fishing Cape May County waters for well over 60 years. And I was born in Runnymede, New Jersey, and I went to work for the Ford Motor Company and traveled around, but always came back to Cape May County to fish. And I spent 25 years in Indiana with the Ford Motor Company and 11 years as a plant manager with a big plant in Indiana. But I always got back here to fish in Cape May County 4 to 8 weeks a year somehow.
The background of Bill Shillingford, you got the name Bucktail Willie. I know the story. Why don't you tell it real fast?
Well, years ago, I started making my own bucktails, and an older fellow that I used to dock next to me in Strathmere, he started using them, and he started calling me Bucktail Willie, and it just stuck, and it stayed with me for 50 years.
And these are these are fishing lures, and did you use actual hair from the back of a deer?
Yes, I used deer tail hair.
It's all about tagging and keeping track of the marine environment, right?
Well, the society is much bigger than just fish tagging. It's an environmental group. They fight for more environmental safety. Protecting birds, protecting fish, protecting sea life, protecting our waterways, etc. And a piece of that is the fish tagging. And I got involved with fish tagging about 25 years ago when the flounder fishing was really bad. And, I decided, I heard about this organization, and I decided to get involved. And over the years, I'm currently now the number one tagger for the American Littoral Society. The previous number one, who was a charter captain out of New York, he just passed away this year, and I moved up to number one. I have like almost 21,000 fish tagged.
And what are the benefits? What's the reasoning behind tagging a flounder or a fish?
Well, you end up figuring out, what the migration patterns are and the growth patterns are. I've got like almost 1,400 returns, and from the flounder situation, I have returns from flounder from New Hampshire to North Carolina. Every state in between. I've got striped bass return from Maine to North Carolina and every state in between.
And Bill, that means that you tagged that fish at one time in the past, and then years later or time later, somebody catches it and sees the tag, right?
That is correct. And there's an address, there's a number on the tag and an address on the tag. And they, if they send the tag in with the information on where they, approximately where they caught it and the size of the fish, and I will get a response back on where it was caught, and the individual who caught it the second time will get a response back where it was originally tagged.
We're talking to Bill Shillingford, and you can listen to him every Saturday morning, most Saturday mornings, with Shep on Fishing. That's Saturday mornings at 7 o'clock on WOND Radio out of the Atlantic City area. That's 1400 AM, a.k.a. Bucktail Willie. So, Bill, what's the one thing you learned from your tagging? What's the thing that just shocked you or...
Well, the big thing, I guess, is how far these fish will travel. Like I said, 90% of my fish have been caught in the Corses Inlet area, and they end up on, could be re-caught any place on the Jersey coast. Now, one interesting thing was sea bass. They asked me a few years ago to tag some sea bass, and I tagged them for 2 or 3 years and never had a return. So I said, why am I wasting my time on this? And next thing I know, I'm getting returns on sea bass from Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, Cape Cod, all over the place, And it's amazing just how far they go. That's the interesting thing. Every return that's out for over a year has some interesting story behind it, is where it actually was found. And one of the things that's very noticeable in my tagging of summer flounder is that a summer flounder that's out over a year and comes back inshore, 80% of them come back inshore north of where they were originally caught. And that shows you a pattern of migration.
So let's talk about flounder. And, of course, every year for the past 10, 15 years, 20 years, the keeper size keeps going up. It drives all of us nuts. Give us the background on when all of a sudden flounder started to fall off the, you know, fall off the charts, and how the commercial fishermen play a role here.
If you go all the way back to the early 80s, the commercial guys found the flounder on the continental shelf, which is where they did their spawning.
How far out? Winter. How far out is that?
40 to 60 miles. From what I understand, they found it by accident. They weren't fishing for flounder. They were fishing for some other species, and they started pulling up these flounder on the continental shelf, and that became a major commercial fish winter fishery. And they started wiping out the population. And the inshore flounder fishing in the 80s was really poor. The feds put in regulations that controlled the commercial catch in what they call waves. There's six waves in the year, and their allocations are, you know, different for each wave. And they put in regulations for the commercial for the recreational guys. First regulation was 13 inches and 10 fish. But then as the years went on, the powers to be in the ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic Councils, they kept raising the size. But the population kept growing. And it went to, you know, the size limit went to 16, and it went to 17, and it went to 17 and a half. When it got to 17 and a half, by their numbers, the population flattened out. And since when it went to 18, the population has been going down ever since. Now, we may see a slight increase this year with the numbers that I just recently saw, but nevertheless, the overall population is down. And that's, in my opinion, is demonstrated further south of us, where Virginia and Maryland, prior to this, the commercial guys finding the fish offshore, Maryland and Virginia had a lot of flounder, and as did Jersey. But the population has not come back strong enough to have that strong population again in Maryland and Virginia. Some people claim that's because of global warming, and I'm not buying it because the population is not here. When the population was strong in Virginia and Maryland, you know, catching 50 or 60 flounder over, you know, up in this area was nothing. I've had days up here where I caught 100 flounder. But the population is not coming back because the size limits have been set so high that we're only removing females from the population.
You make it very clear, the bigger a flounder gets, a fluke gets, the summer flounder being fluke, when it gets up to 17, 18, 19, those are mama flounders. They are breeders. And we're taking the breeders out of the stock. And then the throwback rate, or the mortality rate when you throw something back, could be as high as 30%.
I've been an advisor to the ASMSC on summer flounder and sea bass for like 11 years now. And the advisors have all made the same point, what you just mentioned. But, you know, the commissioners are not listening to it. The commissioners are listening to their scientists, which don't fish. I mean, I've asked the question twice of a scientist that was given a speak on what was going on, how many times he went fishing, and they don't answer you. All they're doing is looking at numbers. And the other thing that's happening, in my opinion, is when they do their surveys, they have these boats that go out and do surveys. Two things have happened. One, the new boat they had, you know, wasn't able to drag flounder. It wasn't equipped with the right kind of nets. Excuse me. And commercial boats, you know, 500 yards away from them were catching flounder, and the research boats were not. Well, then they changed it. They changed their nets, and they got that problem fixed. But they're dragging for flounder in the same areas every year, and they claim they have to do that to keep their scientific data correct.
Oh, you're talking about the infamous Bigelow vessel, right?
Yes, that's the boat. That's the boat. Now, the other thing that they're doing is they go back to the same areas to make their dragging every year, and the fish are moving. The commercial guys will tell you that they don't find the fish in the same area every year. But the Bigelow and the other boat they use goes back. They fish the same areas, the same time of the year, every year. And so the data is flawed because, you know, there's no lack of flounder in the fish market.
We're talking to Bill Shillingford, a.k.a. Bucktail Willie, and you can listen to him every Saturday morning on the Shepon Fishing Radio Show on WOND. My name is Mel Taylor. And so we're talking about the commercial fishermen. They're not bad guys, but for some reason, there's this thing that we're beating up on the recreational fishermen. Boy, if every single recreational fisherman dropped a line, we could never put a dent in the flounder population. Any truth to that, Bucktail?
Well, first of all, on the commercial side, you know, they get a bad rap because they're controlled by poundage by wave. Once they hit their poundage in a given wave, they have to shut down. They can't deliver any more flounder. So the controls on the commercial guys are very strict and severe, and the penalties are severe. The recreational guy, you can't control them as well. That's the problem that they keep arguing. You can't control the recreational guy. But there's a lot of flounder being caught, and there's, you know, it's like, well, let me do it this way. When you look at the flounder movement in the course of the year, the largest flounder of the year in South Jersey are in April. We can't keep them. And the largest flounder, right on through the middle of May, are the largest flounder of the year. The season opens middle of May, end of May. The fish are starting to come down, and the numbers are coming down. When the fish come in here, when the fluke come inside, they're only here for 8 to 12 weeks.
So let me just stop you there. So you're saying the bigger, more mature flounder are coming down, working their way into the inlets, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right.
And they're breeding back there up in the...
No. Winter, summer flounder breed in the continental shelf every winter. And they come in, they come back inside in inshore waters, offshore, inshore, to fatten up for the next breeding season.
Ah.
Okay, now the winter flounder, which we don't have very many of anymore anyway, they spawn inshore and go offshore in the winter. But so people get confused with that. But the summer flounder are in our waters in the summertime, primarily to fatten up for the next breed offshore.
So we talked briefly. I know you talk about it on the air. What are the chances? I mean, it's really tough every year you go to battle with the whole Mid-Atlantic Council, and South Jersey seems to always get the short end of the stick. Do you think New Jersey could possibly get cut in half in regards to regulations that South Jersey can have its own specific set of rules and regs? What are the chances of that?
Well, the chances aren't very high. I know that the New Jersey Marine Council is discussing that. I brought that point up 4 years ago, and it was you know, talked about, but nothing happened. But I know this over the past winter, over the past summer, the New Jersey Marine Council has been talking about the possibility of splitting the state, and it's on their agenda for 2020. The Marine Council doesn't look like they're going to try to do anything in 2019 other than what the feds give them. But they are looking at some options for 2020.
And that split might be right there, Barnegat Inlet, somewhere Barnegat Lighthouse?
There's three or four options that they can look at. In my opinion, the primary option would be the bluefin tuna line, which is, I think, is just north of Atlantic City. But it could be Barnegat Inlet. It, you know, you go to these, depending on where you are, they'll argue for the state should be split at Atlantic City, or it should be split at, you know, Barnegat or whatever. You know, we do have a split at the moment, and for the Delaware Bay coming up to Wildwood, there's a different size limit in the Delaware Bay and in the inshore waters up until you get to Route 47 and Wildwood.
If we had a earlier season or a longer season that started in April and May, you would be cool with that, right?
Absolutely. It'd also be, you know, a boost to the people in the business, the tackle people and the boat liveries and the, you know, marinas and so forth.
This, you know, they always say follow the money. You know, let me be a conspiracy theorist for a moment. Something tells me that somebody wants to protect one way. I always thought that, you know, we want to force people to go into a supermarket and pay $20 a pound for a flounder fillet. You think there's any truth to that conspiracy theory?
I don't know whether that's a major issue because, you know, like I said, the commercial guys, they're pretty well restricted with how many fish they can catch, what they can turn in, and I think that's having an impact on the price. I mean, if they didn't have any restrictions, the price of flounder would be probably a lot lower. But I don't know whether that's having that much of an influence on the commission. So I think the problem, in my humble opinion, is that they're not looking at realistic data. And, you know, there's a movement now saying that the flounder are moving north because of global warming. Well, you know, I've had that argument so many times, I'm tired of arguing about it. But the summer flounder movement clearly is further north because the spawning isn't taking place, allowing the southern fish, the southern states, to get to see the numbers they used to see. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, it must be frustrating because you seem to have all the data. You were out there tagging for years. For some reason, no one seems to be paying respect or giving some merit to all the research that you and others down here have gathered protecting the rights of South Jersey anglers.
They won't even accept the American Littoral Society data. They argue that that's isolated data, even though the data comes from, you know, all the states on the East Coast. They argue that it's isolated data and it can't be used. That makes any sense to you. It doesn't make any sense to me, but that's the argument.
And for more information about Bucktail Willie, you can go up to his website, Bucktail Willie, that's WILLIE.com, BucktailWillie.com.